eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today on the Illini Inquirer podcast, a day after Illinois clinches its first share of the regular season Big Ten title since 2005. Think about what you were doing in 2005. It was a long time ago, but Illinois, that's why it meant so much. That's why there was a court storming as Illinois clinches its first share since 2005 with that win over Iowa. Exciting day in Champaign. And I asked Michael Tulip, as a former Illini basketball player, what that day was like for him to experience from his home right now down in Nashville, and to watch Illinois claw back against Iowa down 15 and for the defense to really just turn it on. He breaks down how Illinois won that game, what it means for them, Curbelo and Hawkins stepping up huge in the second half for that one. And then we look ahead to the postseason, because it's here. After getting that championship, now you move on to the Big Ten tournament, of course, with eyes on the NCAA tournament after that. So great stuff coming up with Michael Tulip. And after we talk with Mike, we'll chat with Mike Kuhn about two different things. He works for visitchampaigncounty.com. So we preview the IHSA boys basketball tournament, which, after 2.5 decades, returns finally to Champaign. It delayed a year due to the pandemic, but we talked to Mike about what they've been gearing up for, how it's going to be different than it was in Peoria, and how it'll be a special atmosphere and event for Champaign and for the entire state. And we also chat about Illinois women's basketball, because Mike Kuhn is the play-by-play for the Illini Radio Network for Illinois women's basketball. He knew Nancy Faye very well for the last 5 years, and with the Hall of Famer retiring after 5 disappointing seasons at Illinois with a 7-77 Big Ten record, I asked Mike about what went wrong, what didn't translate from her obviously great coaching career to the Big Ten from the Division III level. And then we talk about what Illinois women's basketball needs in its next coach. And Mike actually gives us one candidate that he thinks would be interesting, kind of a maybe a script of what Illinois could follow or what they should go after, and what he thinks the potential is for Illinois women's basketball and how Illinois can get there. So we got a lot to get to on this podcast, so let's get to it, shall we? Michael Tulip, Illini Inquirer basketball analyst, is up next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
All right, it's our favorite time of week on the podcast. Michael Tulip, I can tell you, your podcasts are the most popular podcasts of the week. So everyone is sitting there waiting for what you have to say about Illinois clinching a share of a Big Ten regular season championship for the first time since 2005. Mike, what were you doing in 2005? In like eighth grade, ninth grade, where were you at?
Oh, no, I was in fifth grade. Fourth or fifth grade, we had actually just moved to Naperville, Illinois. And here's the thing. I was not an Illinois fan. I was born in Atlanta. We moved around a lot. And I think maybe that's the misconception. It's like I was this kid from Illinois that always wanted to go to Illinois. And I remember watching that team with Dee and Darren and Luther and James and Roger and just enjoying it as a non-Illini fan, just enjoying it, just the way that they played and the joy that they played with. And I think you just see a lot of similarities with that team and this team. But I was, I think maybe 11. I would have been 11. Yeah. I was 11 years old last time they won it. So it's been a considerable amount of time.
Well, I caught up with Chester Frazier afterwards because I was just like, man, it was like regular occurrence to win a Big Ten championship when he committed here, signed here, and then it took 17 years for him to get that title. So it's crazy when you think about how much life has changed or the world has changed or whatever since Illinois has won a Big Ten championship. But this doesn't feel fleeting. This doesn't feel like, obviously, with what the last 3 years have been. But take me through your day, Mike, as a former Illinois player watching Illinois get some breaks, right? Nebraska and Alonzo Verge beat Wisconsin. Iowa has a 15-point lead that it blows. Illinois had a lot to do with that, but it blows the lead and misses some key free throws down the stretch. Chris Murray, the shot looked pretty good, and it goes in and out. Like, what was that like for you to experience as a former Illini?
I think for anyone that has worn the orange and blue, and I'm speaking specifically just – for the players, I know obviously there's plenty of fans as well that have been lifelong fans, and but as a player, as someone who was in those locker rooms, you know, at Ubbin for 4 years, there's some guys that are there for 5 years, like Trent and DeMonte, and how much you pour into it, and there are never any guarantees, ever, and the teams that can figure out that's the case. You know, we need to try to work with no guarantees. Look, when the confetti fell and that digital Big Ten champs banner was going across right behind the Orange Crush, it's hard to describe. It felt like a dream. It really did. To do it at the State Farm Center, to do it on senior night, honoring guys that have epitomized what this program is about and what they've tried to build. And like I said, to have absolutely nothing guaranteed. When you woke up yesterday morning, there was no guarantee you were gonna have a shot at that. And just because Nebraska won, that still doesn't mean that you are guaranteed the win against Iowa. Like there's a lot of boxes that have to be checked. And look, I'll transition from feeling that as a player to more of just the feeling yesterday morning, but build the Alonzo Verge statue, right? I mean, you saw the way that Nebraska was trending to where that looked like a tough game. I know you look at the standings, you see last place team, first place team, but an emotional Tuesday night for Wisconsin, you celebrate. I'm assuming you have some beverage, whatever. Like you celebrate the way that you do.
Like college players go out and have a beer, Mike? No.
I don't know. I'm not going to speak for the Wisconsin locker room, but
they got a lot of beer in Wisconsin. A lot of good beer.
Yeah, and I'm sure they might have had a spotted cow or two. You know, like I think, you know. But I'll say this: every team, I don't care who you are, whatever title you win, especially in basketball, you need some help. It's just, it doesn't matter. Look at any team that's won a national championship, and rarely is it, you know, just some sort of, I don't know, like, yeah, you know, they just went and did it, you know, or there has to, you know, they did it all on their own. There has to be certain things that happen. I mean, look at Rutgers sitting there last night thinking, oh, we need Illinois to win this for us to get a double bye, so Iowa needs to lose. I mean, you could play that game for everyone across the conference. And then you mentioned Iowa in the second half, the missed free throws. Someone tweeted at me last night and said, Iowa lost that game, Illinois didn't win it. I think it was an Illinois fan.
Can you imagine that being like your reaction after all that, by the way? Like, after what just happened, after the last 3 years of finally getting this, we didn't deserve that.
Well, that's what I said. My response was, okay, never mind. Get everybody off the court, court storming, get them off, put the net back on. You know, like, you need to have to find ways to win. And Iowa, they missed free throws, sure. But part of that was the pressure that was applied by Illinois. I'm a firm believer. Is Keegan Murray going 1-for-3 if that's a tie game when he gets fouled? I just don't think so. And that's not to say that Keegan Murray isn't clutch or no, but there's just a different type of pressure. And we can't all be Kyle Guy stepping up in the national semifinal, making all three to send it into overtime. But there is, like, that's all basketball is just applying pressure in certain moments. And it's never, you look at percentages and you can never play the percentages because every game and every situation is different. And I thought that was a story. There was nothing guaranteed yesterday morning. There wasn't. And there still wasn't anything guaranteed after the Nebraska game. And there still wasn't anything guaranteed after the first half. We know that. And they just kept swinging. They absorbed the blows. And it just really, it was a microcosm of what this team's done all season.
Yeah, Mike, you tweeted out after the game, and I want to dive into the intricacies of the game, but you said it was all about culture. Like, this is the definition of culture, which sometimes feels like a buzzword that we just throw around. Every coach says it at their introductory press conference, but I said in our podcast with Joey and Derek, like, this is a tough-ass team. Like, they have so much resolve, right? Like, whether it's in these games where they get down and find a way to come back or just win a Big Ten championship or everything they've gone through this season. Their coach, like, they are a reflection of their coach. And we know Brad Underwood is a self-proclaimed tough-ass dude. But that has permeated over the last 3, 4, 5 years.
You definitely take on the identity of your coach, of your staff. I mean, talk about the assistants as well. We know what Trester Frazier's about. We know what Tim Anderson, Jeff Alexander, and I'll even take it a step further, you know, getting to know different guys on that staff and Tyler and Zach Hamer. I mean, these are all just, that's who they are. You know, that's just who they are. That's their identity. And it's one thing for the coaching staff to embody that. And it's another thing for to have guys on the floor that truly embody that as well. And I think the one thing you've noticed about this Illinois team, of course, you know, there's teams that go on runs on them like any other team. And sometimes that happens in the middle of the game. Rarely ever do you see this team, when it's not cutting time, wilt. And I think that's the big story here, is the comeback against Ohio State, although they fell short, holding on at Michigan State, holding on last night. I mean, there's a certain resolve, like you mentioned, there's a certain mentality that you need to have, you know, to have that steadiness. Right, when everything's going crazy around you, when you're on the road, when you're at home, you know, I always say, you know, on the road, the arena gets crazy, and you kind of are forced to take that craziness and just kind of focus in. And at home, it's almost harder, because when the arena gets the life taken out of it, now you need to find ways to kind of generate your own energy, and you know, now you don't want to let down 16,000 people. And they've done such a good job of managing that. And I think Trent and Demonte, you know, it's fitting. Those seniors, they have a lot to do with that. They're kind of that stabilizing force in that locker room. Kofi mentioned it after the game, right? You know, right after Nebraska won, hey, let's stay even keel, because here was the reality of yesterday's game against Iowa. And it's really hard to do. And I know I'm speaking as someone who was not in a locker room when we won, you know, to win a Big Ten championship, but being around basketball, those type of games, you have to find a way to understand what's on the line, but also find the balance between that and how can we treat this as any other game?
Not be consumed by it.
And not let it consume you. I mean, that's the thing, because there are players and there are teams that in that moment, you can get crippled. Yeah. Right? Think about the culmination. Almost had it last year. Now we build our way up. All this stuff happens. You know, all of it's in a row. Nebraska wins, you know, and to be able to go out there and have that mental fortitude, getting down 15. Now, if you went up 20 early in the game and just coasted to a 18-point victory, then maybe this is a different conversation. But they got down, and the way they closed out that first half, we'll get into the nuts and bolts of it. It says a lot about the staff. It says a lot about the players. I mean, it's you go on down the list. There's a lot of things to be proud of, you know, if you're an Illini fan, and especially for me as a former player, just to watch that and be like, damn, I went there. I played it. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a chest puffing time a little bit, right? if you're sure. Around that program. I asked these to the players, and they didn't go too much into it, but you could tell by the celebration last year in the Big Ten tournament how validating that was after they felt they were wronged, right? But I feel like this one, to me from the outside, has to feel even more validating, Mike, because everything that was going against you with injuries and illnesses and all that, and you know, Wisconsin having this crazy season that they deserve, but also were a little bit fortunate to win all these close games, finally goes against them. You were, you know, a shot away from having a 3-year run unlike any other in Illinois history and not having a Big Ten title to show for it. Like, I know you could sit there and point to that, but now you have this physical manifestation that's going up in the rafters that's going to be there forever. You're going to have 10, 20-year reunions about this team that you wouldn't if you didn't win a Big Ten title. How much validation is this, do you think, for Underwood, those seniors, and all, everybody associated with that program?
Look, we've talked at length about how incredible this turnaround has been. And look, every coach has a plan, right, in terms of I want to come in, I want to turn things around. But the next step, and I touched on it a little bit a couple minutes ago, you know, the next step's having players that not only share that vision, but hold each other accountable to it as well. That's the next step. And Coach Underwood and these seniors, I'll say this, when you win a conference title, there's some serious reverberation there. You know, some serious reverberation where, whether that's recruits, you know, and I'll say this, Underwood and these seniors, they didn't need this Bell Age.
Yeah.
They didn't need it. Like, you know, if it didn't shake out, that doesn't mean that Trent Frazier and Demonte Williams are less of a player or less of a leader. It doesn't make Brett Underwood less of a coach.
Right.
But what I'll say is that they may not have needed the validation, but what this reaffirms is that having a solid foundation, having a true culture, and I know it's buzzword city, but and then being able to focus and value those little things every single day, the validation, and it's reaffirming that works.
Yeah,
that's what it is. And I'll get even more micro with it. Coleman Hawkins, you know, and this goes for recruits, this goes for players that still have eligibility left. He wasn't playing much, and for good reason at the time. Right. You know, he didn't look good. You know, he wasn't confident, but he sticks with it. And I think the other thing, I'll take it a step further. He has a coach that expects a lot out of him and doesn't just throw him to the side. And in the biggest moment, when you have a conference championship on the line, he delivers. And I think because of that backing, and the credence that can give a coach when it comes to recruits and younger players, you know, these guys truly seeing it and saying, oh yeah, no, we trust that guy. Oh no, that works. You know, like that goes so far. Like, this coach has our best interest in mind as a team first and foremost, but for us as players as well. And when you can have a team that buys into that, see what happens.
Yeah, we talk about how like IO is such a great tool for recruiting, right? Get you the NBA, right? You're going to develop, you're going to do all those things. And Brad pushed him hard. Kofi's the same way. Like Kofi can accept that hard coaching and loves it. He actually asked Brad for more of it. But Coleman, who didn't have good body language, didn't perform well midway through the season, Brad kept with him. And now he's seeing the fruits of sticking with it. When some guys, we've talked about this before, Mike, could have become a problem. Like, it could have been a problem for the team. And it turns out a month later, Coleman Hawkins is a key, and we'll talk about it, but a key to winning a Big Ten championship and a huge key for the postseason moving forward. That's a heck of a sell to parents, right? To recruit to, you know, some guys might have looked already towards the transfer portal if they're Coleman Hawkins in mid-February, right? Like, I think that says a lot about, yes, what we're doing is working, and if I stick with it, eventually we'll see the rewards, even if I'm not seeing it right now.
For sure. And I look at RJ Melendez, Podziemski, Goody. I mean, what this does is just show them, and it's something where they know, hey, I got to keep busting my tail, because it's been proven that if you aren't performing, you're sitting. And you know what? That's what ends up kind of propelling your program. You obviously need the players in there, but the competitive aspect of it, of, you know, hey, I need to perform at a high level to get on the court. And if somebody behind me is performing at a higher level, they are going to play. And I have to be okay with that. And part of the reason, part of what makes guys okay with that, so to speak, if it does happen, is because they see that this can be the reward at times. You know, if you do play your cards right and do it the right way. And I heard Coleman on radio last night. You know, this he wasn't sitting there just going like, oh, yeah, no, I'm sitting. This is totally cool. I'll work my way back in. It bothered him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it bothered him. And as it should. I think anybody that's a competitor, that should bother you. And I think being able to take that energy and all that bothers you and placing it into the positive things. And I think that's what he deserves credit for.
Like, you can get pissed off, right? Like, it's good if you get pissed off, but you got to channel it the right way. And he seemed to channel it the right way eventually. So kudos to him. All right, let's talk about this actual game, Mike. Iowa goes 12 straight possessions with a field goal. They were pushing the tempo. They were attacking Illinois. And they get down. Illinois gets down 43-28. But then the rest of the game, Mike, Iowa makes 10 of 34 field goals. 10 of their last 34. What changed defensively for Illinois?
Yeah, there were just some miscues in that first half. And part of it was adjusting to the fact that Kofi Coburn wasn't by the basket. You know, they played different lineups. Even when Rebraca was out there, he was on the perimeter setting screens. They don't post him traditionally. So it's a little bit different for Kofi. You know, so he's getting used to, how do I play these gaps? How do I'm being on help side. If I'm the low man, am I the one rotating? You know, and it was 19-19. And that's when the avalanche started, right? You know, Keegan Murray gets downhill with his right hand on Coleman Hawkins. RJ Melendez helps uphill. Chris Murray gets a dunk. Keegan Murray roots Coleman Hawkins up. They throw it over the top for a dunk. Plummer gets labeled on a screen for Sanford pull-up. DeMonte goes under the screen on a Sanford three. Curbelo goes under a screen on a Perkins three. You know, there were a lot of mistakes that were made. This wasn't just shots going in for Iowa. It was Illinois having some pretty self-inflicted wounds. But here's the other thing too. I'm a big believer in law of averages, but you got to help yourself a little bit. The law of averages aren't going to work in your favor if you keep giving up layups and dunks. Yeah. And that's really what was happening. You know, Trent got beat on a back screen that may or may not have been called out. And that's when he kind of jumped over Perkins, and could have been and one there with Kofi being close to the circle. But there were a lot of things that happened that were changed, and why the script was flipped. And a couple of those were during those 12 straight possessions of scoring, twice Kofi went for blocks and didn't get them. And there were putbacks.
Which
twice.
Is one of my least favorite things.
and then twice in their run to close out the half, he went over to explode to jump on one and he didn't. And he immediately went back and blocked out Rebraca. He blocked out Chris Murray. And to me, that ended up being the difference. It was super minuscule. But it wasn't what he did, it's what he didn't do that ended up helping them and saving a few possessions. Because if he goes for that block, Coleman Hawkins was in a position where he would have had two guys to block out, Keegan Murray and Rebaka, or and Chris Murray. So those little things, right? And then you start to become a little more disciplined. You start to become a little more solid. And then the other thing too, Jeremy, you start making some shots. Like that's, you know, that's the, let's I can get into the defensive miscues and this and that, but there's a different type of feeling for the other team when you are making shots and they don't just feel like the wind's at their back. I mean, that was the difference. I think you put them on their heels at the end of the first half and you close that gap just enough. And I said it, like I tweeted it out last night, taking advantage of those non-Murray front court combo minutes that typically come at like the 15, 14 minute mark. That first 5 minutes, if you can shave into that lead, and they did, they took the lead. They were 47-46 before they inserted that lineup. When they inserted that lineup, they went on another like 8-0 yeah. run. And if you don't chip into that lead to start the second half and you're still down seven, now that 8-0 run pushes to 15, and I'm not sure you're coming back. I'm not sure you can mount another comeback there. So those 10 minutes, last five of the first half, first five of the second half, was kind of ended up being the game.
Coleman Hawkins, let's give him some more love because I thought this was his best game in an Illini uniform. 9 points, came up with some big buckets in the second half, the three, the runner that kind of built Illinois that lead there. But defensively, Mike, 10 rebounds on the defensive side, and our guy Isaac Trotter put together the numbers, went back and watched the film. When Coleman was on Keegan Murray, he was 2 of 13 shooting for 6 points. What a defensive performance. We've seen it against Ron Harper this year, early in the year, and then we kind of saw him disappear and maybe not focus as much on that end. But if a light bulb went on with Coleman Hawkins saying, like, oh, this is how I make my huge impact, this is how I eventually score more points because I'll be on the floor more, this is how I'm going to make my way to the NBA, is because his defensive potential is through the roof. And how much does he change Illinois if he's playing this way?
A lot. He changes them. He changes this team a lot, just from the standpoint of your versatility, both offensively and defensively. We talked about the five out lineup that you can play, where you bring him out to the perimeter, opens up driving lanes. But defensively, yeah, I think it's defensively more than offensively, because he's capable of emergency switching onto guards and being serviceable. And then what he did on Keegan Murray last night. And it's not about ripping the ball from the guy. It's just make it difficult, force tougher shots. And that's really what he did. And it was such a shame. I mentioned the Kofi futile attempts at the blocks. Coleman had a really good possession that forced Keegan Murray into a little left-hand floater that airballed over the top, over like off the top of the backboard almost. And Kofi jumped up and just like swung his arm to try to block it. Probably wasn't within 7 feet of it. And then Rebaka just gets a layup, and that's when you're like, man, like I wish Coleman would get rewarded for that. But look, he, you know, the different look he gives defensively, and it's not just blocking shots, it's altering shots. It's, you know, it's the way he's willing to stick his nose in there for defensive rebounds. Kofi's typically, you know, Kofi can hit and get sometimes, but he's wrestling down there with some bigger guys. And, you know, you play in the tournament, and that's Hunter Dickinson, and that's Trace Jackson Davis potentially, and then Iowa again. You know, it's, you're going to need to have a guy like that. And look, there were moments I thought they missed Jacob Granison last night. Yeah. I'll say that. But what Coleman Hawkins can offer is just a little bit of a different look, and it gives Illinois a little bit more breathing room to have a little bit more size, have a little more length. And look, for a lot of teams, for as much as Jacob Granison does for this team, having a guy like Coleman Hawkins that you're like, oh, we have Jacob Granison out, who are we going to start? Oh yeah, it's this guy that goes for like 9 and 11 and makes arguably the biggest impact of anybody in the game. That just, it speaks to this depth. And if you don't have a guy like that, who do you turn to last night? I think RJ Melendez and Luke Goody are certainly serviceable, but are they offering the impact in this moment? Maybe down the road they do, but in that moment, in that game, I'm not sure you pull that game out without Coleman Hawkins, period.
Agreed. I also don't think, even though it's a roller coaster ride, you don't pull that game out without Andre Curbelo. At one point, I think to end the game, he had a hand in 15 of the last 20 points Illinois scored. And I know that the turnovers drive you mad sometimes, but offensively, he just gives you another weapon. Especially Trent struggled offensively, at least as a scorer last night. And Andre Curbelo gives you 14 points off the bench. Not the most efficient, but gave you some huge buckets and also six assists. But defensively, Alphonso Plummer was getting cooked again. And you bring in Curbelo, and you needed stops late in the game. And Curbelo was huge on that end. I know he gave up the and one, Mike, but I don't know if you're ever going to get the consistency. I don't know if you're ever going to get rid of the maddening plays, but he's just an X factor that he could be the difference in a win here in March.
Well, you mentioned the N1, and I'm glad you mentioned it because it was one of the points that I was going to make. I hope people understand how that N1 happened and why that N1 happened. And for anyone that wants to get Andre Curbelo off the floor, the opposing coach wanted him off the floor. If that tells you the value that he has, and when the ball is in his hands, I get it can be a roller coaster, but they designed a four high, clear it out, and put Andre Curbelo on an island for the hope of a hand check to get him out of the game. Now, if that was a guy, if he was this player that some Illinois fans describe him as, yeah, Fred McCaffrey's probably hoping he stays on the floor.
Right.
He drew it up to get him off the floor. And that's exactly what happened. But look, I understand the roller coaster. It was bad when he first checked in. Mm-hmm. It was bad. A couple of forced shots, you know, the underhand, like granny alley-oop that went off the backboard obviously wasn't a good look. But I'll say this. In the second half, he was just about the only guy at one point that I thought looked like he was willing to take a swing. And as much as the turnovers can drive you crazy, I will take a guy any day that wants to take the swing. You know, and he does that. Like, look – sometimes all you need is just that 5-minute bellow spurt. And that's what it was in the second half. Like, he took over that game. He, you know, getting to the basket, getting to the rim, and then the throwback to Coleman for the three. Like, he made a lot of really, really good plays in this game. I thought the charge call was horrible. I know we've been on officials lately. I thought Chris Murray was leaning. That's a really tough call to make. And that's not only a foul, that's a turnover on Andre Curbelo as well. So, look, you mentioned the defense. It's elite, and there were some cheap fouls, but he bothers guards. He bothered those guards. And Alphonso Plummer, I mentioned the 8-0 run that Iowa had. He tries to swim across and lunge at the ball, misses Keegan Murray and one. Okay, he turns his back on his man when the ball is being dribbled by him, kick out Chris Murray, three. And then he doesn't put a body on Tony Perkins, and that's a putback. And I get it. He also hits a three to make it 57-52, but at some point against the number four offense in the country, you need stops. Mm-hmm. And you got enough offense, especially when you have guys – I know Trent wasn't on, but you had enough there – for the defense to kind of outweigh the offense in terms of what you needed in that moment. And what you need in that moment was a guy like Andre Curbelo who moves his feet arguably better. Like, Trent's really good at the angles. Like, you could argue that Andre moves his feet better than anybody on that team. And, you know, gets through screens, maybe not as good as Trent, but pretty close when he's up to it. And he's been up to it these past couple games. He's been fantastic. And that's where you see the 22 minutes reflected. Is more on that end than the offensive end. And I thought he still packed a pretty good punch there in the second half for the most part offensively.
Yeah, I don't marry myself to the plus minus, but it seemed to tell the tale of Curbelo and Plummer the other night. It was plus six for Curbelo, minus seven for Plummer. And we know Plummer's is a great piece to have. Like, when you need to spark a run offensively, man, you get that guy the ball, but other teams also attack him. So it's great, again, to have the depth where you can bring in a guy like Curbelo last night when you need stops, and to do that plus get some offense out of him. Those sophomores, Mike, are just complete X factors, right? You pretty much know what you're getting out of Kofi and Trent. I know points can fluctuate. You know what you're getting out of those guys. You know what you're getting out of DeMonte, but Hawkins and Curbelo, like, those guys, if they're good, people might want to buy stock in Illinois, right? It's just you don't know what you're going to get every night out of those guys.
You don't, and part of that's just the maturation process of, you know, you can make an argument sophomore year you didn't really know what you're going to get out of Trent, you know, and I get it's in different ways, but I do think that if you can return part of this core of Curbelo, Hawkins, Kofi, maybe, you know, who knows? Like, that's a hell of a starting point there. You know, and then you mentioned the recruits, you mentioned the potential progression of a Podziemski, Goody, Melendez, and then you take a few swings and address some needs in the transfer portal. I think you're going to need to address some shooting.
Yeah,
there's no question about that. So anyone that's a guy that can shoot it like Alfonso Plummer, which is I'm not sure another guy's going to roll around like that, but you know, someone who's a player like that even adds a little bit more defensively. I mean, you see what Plummer's done for himself this year. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him somehow sneak onto an All Big Ten team. Really, like I don't think that's out of the question. So yeah, no, I think those two guys, the sophomores in particular, you saw Coleman Hawkins make a pretty significant jump. And for Goody and Melendez and Podziemski, if you can get something similar to that, you're cooking, man.
Yeah, Melendez and Goody both hit big threes. I thought Goody was good on the glass. If Jacob Grandison's out for a little bit, Mike, I mean, he's in a sling. I don't know how long he'll be out. Underwood said day to day, but obviously doesn't look good when that happens. What do you need out of those guys? Is it just a made shot and some energy on the glass? What are you looking for out of those guys to kind of fill some minutes while Coleman and Curbelo kind of play bigger roles?
Yeah, look, you don't need much. And when I say you don't need much, I'm not saying they just go out there and be ball movers and pass it around and take a back seat. Play with the amount of confidence that they've been playing with. Absolutely, that's first and foremost. When you're open, step up, knock it down. But the other thing that I'll mention is you got guys in this team. Scoring, that's taken care of for the most part. That's taken care of. Defensively, you got some good defenders on this team. You know, so you can't come in and be a letdown. You know, I thought Melendez took that huge charge in the second half against Keegan Murray, but in the first half he helped uphill, and there was a Chris Murray dunk. So, you know, certain things like that, you know, where you can just continue to just, hey, let's push the envelope. How consistent can we be? Can we strive for that perfect game? It may not happen, but, you know, the obligatory Goody three in the first half that we tend to get every now and then, just being shot ready like he always is. But, you know, whatever they offer to this team, if it's not done with confidence, it's not done right. You know, I think that's really the story for these guys is don't care what you're doing as long as you're confident doing it. And you're playing hard and you're playing the right way, that should be the three things that you focus on. It might not always show up in the stat sheet, but man, their contributions last night. I thought Goody was solid. He walled off Keegan at one point to force a tough shot. You know, he hit that big three in the first half. You know, Melendez, I just mentioned what he added. That's a big three that he hit too. I mean, I believe it was 61-54 before he hit that one to make it 61-57. That's big, man. It was a great pass from Andre Curbelo too. You know, you're going to need contributions from everybody. And I think that's always the story in March.
Mike, I'm just kind of reflecting on this week. We came in with Illinois having a chance to be a 5 seed in the Big Ten tournament and play on Thursday. And now they're the 1 seed. And they get a share of the Big Ten title in a year that the other favorites, Purdue, finishes a disappointing third, 13-7. Michigan finishes tied for 7th, right? And then Rutgers and Iowa kind of come out of nowhere to tie for 4th in this league. And Wisconsin comes out of nowhere. Not out of nowhere because it's Wisconsin, but surprises everybody to get a share of the title. What a crazy regular season this was for the Big Ten. And they currently have no top 10 teams. They have – or I guess Purdue's number 9, but I don't know if they deserve to be 9. But you have only 4 teams in the top 25. But it's crazy that it feels like 10 through 1 – there's not much separation in this league right now. And I remember, you know, Illinois 04, 05, obviously those were great teams, but the bottom half of that league was not close to the top 4 of that league. Now it just, I know the bottom 3-4 might not be, but it's crazy how similar, how close all these teams are. And it seems like every one of them has a star and a pretty good coach.
That's the point you just made, that last point. I think why that gap between 1 through 10 doesn't feel so big is because of the star power.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that I just don't think we've seen in the league. And part of that's going to be reflected by potentially 3 first-team All-Americans from the same conference. That just doesn't happen often. And college basketball is one of those games where – and one of those sports where, you know, if you got a guy, you're in it. you're in it. You know, as long as the rest of the team, like Wisconsin does, where they fill in their roles and they know who they are, you know, you got a chance. You got a fighter's chance in basically every game. I think Michigan's starting to figure that out. You know, not that coming into the year they didn't know that Hunter Dickinson was their guy, but now knowing, and I get they just won in Columbus without him, but knowing, hey, Hunter's our guy, and then Devontae Jones is a little more comfortable in his role. You know, instead of these freshmen who come in, oh, I'm a top 10 pick, I'm a first rounder, that's kind of subsided into just, hey, this is my role. And that's what makes a team more dangerous. That's what makes that 8-9 matchup. You got Trace Jackson Davis, Hunter Dickinson, even going down, you know, the non-double byes. You got Keegan Murray, you know, and then with the teams that do have a double bye, you have a lot of star power within that as well. So that's the reason why you see that parity in a sense. And we always made the joke when we were in the locker room, and I think those guys probably still use it. It's just life in the Big Ten, night in and night out. Yeah, it's, you don't really know what you're going to get. And I think it was pretty much on display yesterday. We're all the way down to the final game in the Big Ten. You didn't know how things were going to shake up. And then now hitting into the Big Ten tournament, you and I were just sharing the KenPom analytics. Top two percentages to win the final is Purdue and Iowa, the two teams that did not share the Big Ten tournament. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I always enjoy this week. I love the NCAA tournament, obviously, but championship week is something that is right up there, and it's going to be interesting, man. I mean, you're going to probably have another Purdue Wisconsin matchup. Likely, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen, but it's a pretty, I don't want to say favorable. I hate using the word favorable, but for Illinois, it worked out pretty well for you if you want a chance to go to the championship.
Yeah, so I want to ask you about that. Michigan, which I think Illinois, if you're rooting for your resume, you probably want Michigan to win, because if they beat Indiana, they'll probably be in the top 30 of the net, which means that's a quad one victory at home. Definitely on the road and at home. And then Indiana, I mean, they're playing for their NCAA tournament lives. I think you match up really well against Indiana, right? Like, you kind of had their number. But what do you think of either one of those matchups on Friday that you'd have in the 1 versus 8 or 9?
Yeah, you know, it's a win and maybe get in for Indiana. Michigan, I think I do believe that even if Michigan loses that game, they're in.
Agreed.
There's just been so much losing for bubble teams.
The bubble's so bad.
Oh yeah, there's only a year in and year out. There's maybe 5-6 teams that are right there on that bubble. It's like 2 or 3 this year that really have a chance, or the teams that are out really outside that are like next 4 out. They're going to need a lot to happen, in order for them to sneak in. But look, I think if you're looking at matchups, I just think this Michigan team has a really hard time defending this Illinois team. I actually like that matchup better than Indiana, because I do think Indiana guards, they bog it down. They're a team that wants it in the 50s and 60s. And not to say that Illinois can't play that type of game. They certainly can. And they've shown that they can win those type of games. I don't think there's between Indiana and Michigan, I just don't think there's one that you can definitively pick and say, oh no, this is the team that we want to play. I think both present different challenges. Both have all league big men, and Hunter Dickinson's kind of proven to be just about as, you know, valuable to his team as anybody in the country. And and Trace Jackson Davis, I'm sure, is still looking for a chance to go and compete. And I know Rutgers would probably be the one that gets the shot at Iowa, right?
Yep.
That's a bad matchup for Iowa.
That's going to be a great game. I hope Iowa definitely wins on Thursday, because I think that sets up to be a great game. And listen, both those teams can have matchup problems for Illinois, but Rutgers doesn't feel like the same team from a month ago when Illinois went into the rack, and they're not in the rack, which to me seems like it matters a lot.
Big distinction. not in Piscataway. You know, but I did witness that Rutgers team. You know, as stout as they are in the rack, I mean, you can't look away from 44 points that they gave up to Iowa. Like, that is something, and I think it speaks to their versatility defensively for how good Iowa is. You know, they can play a little small against Iowa. And I think that's the reason why, out of everybody probably in the Big Ten, Rutgers is probably the worst matchup for Iowa. Just because of the bodies and the length that they can put on them. And
man, I love Friday of the Big Ten tournament. Like the eight games you get, or the four games you get there with usually the eight best teams, that's as good as it gets. It's one of my favorite days to cover. So if you get two session tickets back to back, I would suggest Friday of the Big Ten tournament.
It's always one of my most unproductive days of work, that's for sure. Basically tell my boss, hey, yeah, I'm working.
Yeah.
I got the computer in front of me, but I'm tuned in to these games that are going on. It's going to be fun, man.
Yeah, you could have Ohio State, Purdue, Wisconsin, Michigan State, or maybe Maryland beats Michigan State because Fats is playing really well towards the end of this year. But it's one of the best days. Obviously last year Illinois came in with a huge chip on its shoulder. What do you want to see, Mike? I mean, obviously you want a Big Ten championship, but what do you want to see out of this team this week?
I think you just want to see good basketball. Whether that results in a Big Ten tournament championship, I don't want to use the word irrelevant, but there is something to be said about,
there's bigger stuff ahead, right?
You lose a heartbreaker in the semi, like, you know, then you rest up, you recharge, and you try to go after this Final Four, which I think is like Underwood said, that's the real goal here. Now, you know, it's easier said than done. I know for a fact that's not the mentality in that locker room. They're not over here saying like, all right, you know, let's bow out in the semis. Right. You know, they're, because look, it's Iowa, it's potentially Iowa again, it's potentially Rutgers again, and you know, there's something to be said about that. You know, going and getting another win there, and you know, maybe hopping up to the two seed, which that would be maybe if you ran the table, but certainly solidifying yourself as a three.
Yep.
And the reason why that's important to solidify yourself as a three instead of a four is that it takes away a potential Sweet 16 matchup with a one seed.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, we're going to do a film room of some defensive stuff later in the week, but great stuff as always, and now we get postseason basketball once again. And Big Ten tournament's always fun, one of my favorite events to cover. And then right after that, that's where Illinois, its next checklist item, right? Because you got the Big Ten tournament last year, you get the Big Ten championship. The next thing to exercise is that NCAA tournament. So looking forward to talking about it with you, man.
Appreciate it, man. Looking forward to it as well.
Great stuff as always from Mike. He'll hang out with us throughout the rest of the postseason, of course, to break down Illini men's basketball. We always appreciate him. And later on in the week, we'll have a VIP film room of that Iowa win, breaking down a lot of the defensive issues in the first half and then how Illinois turned things around in the second half. With guys like Kofi Coburn, Coleman Hawkins, and Andre Curbelo playing a big, big role in that. When we come back, let's talk about the IHSA Boys Basketball Tournament returning to Illinois, as well as a coaching change for Illini Women's Basketball, a long struggling program. What do they need to do to turn things around and finally get a solid foundation once again? Mike Kuhn from VisitChampaignCounty.com, also the Illini Women's Basketball play-by-play announcer, he joins us next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Happy to have on a familiar voice to a lot of people, Mike Kuhn. He's the director of sports events and film for Visit Champaign County and also the play-by-play for Illini Women's Basketball on the Illini Radio Network. You've probably heard his voice at State Farm Center as well. Well, Mike, we got a lot to talk about, but let's start with the IHSA Boys Basketball Tournament returning to Champaign. This has been decades, years in the making of bringing this back to Champaign. I know you guys at Visit Champaign County are so pumped to bring it back. Sadly, had to wait an extra year, but after all this wait, what's an extra year, I guess? But it's finally here. So what's going into this week for you guys?
Well, there's a lot of elements, and obviously when Jane DeLuce, our executive producer, our executive director, took on this role, that's the first thing she heard, is that we got to get the state tournament back. So we are ecstatic to bring it back. What we've tried to do is try to put other elements into hosting that makes it special for the teams, the schools, the fans. And so we've added that we have a kids zone, we have a tech zone, where there's a college fair up at the upper concourse. We're fortunate this year, this is the 50th anniversary of the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association. So there's a real extensive, I think a really nice display that they will have on the upper concourse. And you know, that beyond that, it's logistics. I have been coordinating the hotels. So we are assigning hotels, which is much different than Peoria, where they were able to have everybody housed at one hotel. So I've been working with teams. We have 16 different community hosts. So they'll have a host from Champaign-Urbana or the area that will help you know, guide them through all their stay beyond the logistics of you know, playing the game at State Farm Center. So there's a lot of things behind the scenes. We're excited about it, but you know, this is it's been a busy time leading up to it for sure.
So Mike, I know the IHSA has set up the bracket the way it's going to be. So if people have, you know, problems probably with the Friday Saturday format of this with the consolation on one day, they can take that to the IHSA. But what are you guys hoping? Because Peoria obviously did a really good job hosting. Attendance went down here in recent years, but they had that March Madness experience that was kind of their calling card. What do you guys hope to be the calling card for having it back in Champaign?
Well, we mentioned a few of the other elements. You know, I think the venue itself, State Farm Center, we bid on this event while the State Farm Center was under renovation, and they had to kind of imagine what that's going to look like. I know that now that it's done, and you know, the venue is certainly a calling. I think a lot of people are excited to come back to the U of I, come back to the, you know, place where the Illini play. They'll have access to their locker rooms, so it's you know, behind the scenes, just the same locker rooms that the Illini dress in. Tim Sinclair is doing most of the game, so the voice, the PA voice, so we'll have all that. And we see this is just like you would see on game day. So there'll be the pyrotechnics, the introductions, the video, all the elements that go into putting on the Illinois basketball game day experience they'll experience in Champaign. And so, you know, beyond that, we have suites. And so our corporate sponsors have had, you know, first right of refusal. I think all the suites are spoken for. So, you know, that's exciting as well.
Yeah. Could have some big time talent there, obviously, especially in 4A. Kenwood is still involved. Nick Martinelli, Glenbrook South is one of the best players. Glenbard West is loaded. Lamont has an Illini target. Nojus Udrasitis, Jaden Shute, a Duke recruit, could be there. We'll see who's there after the Super Sectionals here. But and of course, your Monticello Sages have a chance to be there in 2A, Mike.
Yeah, I'll be there tonight, 6 p.m. in Springfield. It's been an exciting run. I mean, we kind of saw at the beginning of the year that this was possible. They started 15-0. They played a tough schedule. They played, in fact, they have three losses on the year. They're 31-3, and they avenged one of those losses in the regional final in an overtime game against Prairie Central. And then their other two losses, Meridian, who hit this, they hit the 60-foot shot to beat Tuscola. They're still alive. And then Tutopolis is still alive in this Super Sectional. So it's a good team. You know, they play Bloomington Central Catholic tonight in Springfield, a team that they've beaten before, but a team that they've had a lot of really, really good games over the past few years.
Well, Mike, before I switch over to Illinois women's basketball and get your insight there, for people who want to go out to this, that aren't going to the Big Ten tournament to watch the Illini, what advice would you give them? What do they need to know getting to the State Farm Center?
Well, the rules, the same rules apply in terms of, you know, clear bag policy and all that. You know, you can get tickets through FightingIllini.com. They're going through our ticket center. So you can go to FightingIllini.com. Under tickets, the state tournament, so get your tickets in advance. You know, parking will be the same. You know, it's going to be an exciting week. I think the thing that the IHSA, not only are we coming back to Champaign, but this is the first time since they went to two classes that the entire tournament has been on one weekend. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited for Saturday. They've set it up as Championship Saturday, so all four championship games are all on one day, and that's never happened before. So, you know, if you can't come over on the two weekdays, you know, definitely make it out for Saturday, because being able to come over and see all four championship games in one day has never been done before.
Well, Mike, you're the play-by-play, for Illinois women's basketball for the Illini Radio Network, and I know I had great interactions with Nancy Faye in her 5 years. I know you worked closely with her for 5 years and have nothing but good things to say, but obviously the results didn't come for a Hall of Fame coach who obviously knows what she's doing is an X's nose coach. So why do you think that didn't translate? The D3 unbelievable success did not translate to the Big Ten level.
Well, as you know, it all comes down to recruiting. And she happened to come in at a time where I think the Big Ten has experienced unprecedented success. They haven't had a Final Four team in this run, but I think they'll have five teams this year that will host first and second rounds, which means they're top 16 seeds. And you know, they've had an inability, I think, to recruit a real strong five. They had real hopes on Mackenzie Blazek, who was from Franklin, Indiana, that had all kinds of health issues and just didn't pan out. And you know, beyond that, if you look at the two teams that played in the Big Ten championship game on Sunday, you had Monica Sinano from Iowa, you had Mackenzie Holmes from Indiana, two big posts, and we just have not been able to, for whatever reason, to be able to recruit those posts. I think we've got some up and coming really good guards. I think Kendall Bostic is a nice player. We've got some nucleus going forward, but you know, the recruiting, if you compare the recruits to other teams in the Big Ten especially, they just didn't match up. And Coach Faye has said time and again, I haven't forgot how to coach. I think she's a great coach. But as you said, the results didn't pan out.
Yeah. Well, Illinois has tried, you know, Joelette Law, the hotshot assistant from Rutgers under C. Vivian Stringer, right? One of the greatest of all time. The mid-major star in Matt Bolon, who I thought was a slam dunk hire, got some recruits early on, but just couldn't sustain it. And we know some of the off-court issues that seem to be happening there. And then you have the D3 Hall of Famer, Nancy Faye. What do you think this program needs right now, Mike? And what is a different era of women's college basketball feels like?
There's no doubt. I've mentioned before that you look in the NIL era, and certainly social media and social media followers is going to play a big part going forward. Girls basketball players have the social media following. In fact, if you look at last year, the largest follower of any college basketball player was Paige Beckers at UConn, a women's player. You know, I think it's that compared to 5 years ago is going to play a part in this hire. You know, I always my analogy in trying to get over the hump, because certainly other teams in the Big Ten have done it. Indiana had no success in women's basketball. They were among the bottom, and they've been able to raise up to the top. Michigan has never won a Big Ten championship, and they've been kind of mired in the middle of the pack. And they've risen to be a top 10 program. So it can be done at Illinois. I think what needs to happen is, my analogy is, imagine going up an inclined driveway with ice. You have to gun it to get up the driveway. And so I think what happens in the first 2 years, you have the transfer portal. I think whoever comes in has got to have some connections to the transfer portal and get some real strong players in, and, you know, perhaps players that they had on their roster, say they're an assistant or some other contacts that they have, to get the thing jump-started. Yeah. I think that we have a nucleus of players. You look at our five starters, they're two freshmen and three sophomores that I think could all play a role, but I think it's going to take somebody that can come in and really hit the ground running and make an immediate impact over the first couple of years, and then back that up with recruits from high school, because you know, if you don't do that, if you don't have success recruiting the first couple of years, it's awfully tough to get it turned around.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Mike, to be able to have some success like say a Brad Underwood, you got to inherit some players, and he didn't inherit a lot, but you got to turn some of those players and recruits you got into impact players like Trent Frazier, Damonte Williams, and such. So Leonai, right? Jada Peebles has scored a lot here, and you have Camille Jackson coming in, a really top-ranked recruit. McKenzie was a really good freshman for them this year, one of their top scorers. So what does the next coach have?
Well, the cupboard is not bare, and I know that the results didn't pan out this year. The thing that I think fans can't really appreciate this year, we had two COVID pauses. So we went 2 weeks between games. I think 10 days the first time, 10, and then, well, it was more than that because we had the Christmas break in there. So not only did we not play games, they didn't have a full roster for practices. And so, you know, what would have happened had we not had those COVID pauses? You're trying to develop a young team. I think certainly the results would have been different. But they played two really strong games, I think, at the Big Ten tournament. I know we lost by 18 to Nebraska, but they made 15 three-pointers in that game, and, you know, hats off to them for doing that. But Dalia McKenzie had a great Big Ten tournament. I think people have an appreciation of what she can bring to the table. And Jayla Oden, who had some health issues early in the year, is starting to come on as well. So I think our backcourt with Leonai is in pretty good shape. You know, we just need to really improve the front court. Erica Porter played pretty well in the Big Ten tournament, and Kendall Bostic led the Big Ten in rebounding. But, you know, as I mentioned at the top, to succeed, especially in the Big Ten and probably nationally, you need a real strong post to anchor that, and that's going to be important going forward.
Mike, I don't know if you're in your role, you have names in mind that you're willing to throw out there, but if you do, go ahead. But what do you think? What do you think this program's capable of? What do you think Illinois women's basketball, which hasn't made an NCAA tournament since 2003, right? Like, what do you think they are capable of in a 5-year span here?
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at the high schools in Illinois, and I've said this to many people, that there are more quality high school girls players in this state than there are boys players. I mean, certainly there's some talent on the boys side as well. It's going to take somebody to say, or a couple somebodies to say, we're going to stay home, and, you know, similar to what Io DeSumo did on the men's side. Is there a player out there that can say, we're gonna start this, and we're gonna build it, and we're gonna win? And, you know, at the end of Io's stay here, you know, the team was back in the NCAA tournament. And so it's gonna take a few of those to make inroads in the state. Now, in the meantime, those players are going to Iowa and Michigan and Notre Dame and such. You have to have a connection somewhere. And so, you know, one of the people that I would have my eye on would be Kelly Bond, who is she's an associate head coach at Texas A&M. She played for Teresa Grintz. She was on two Sweet 16 teams. She was from Chicago, Whitney Young. So she has the Chicago connection. She's on a staff that's won a national championship at Texas A&M. Dynamic. I think she would be really good with the public. So that's just one name to kind of throw out there. But, you know, somebody of her ilk that can not only re-energize the recruiting, but re-energize the fan base. I think the Illini, there's a potential there from a fan base standpoint to really start to grow the crowds at State Farm Center. I mean, you look at the crowds that have happened, and I mentioned the two programs are in the Big Ten championship game. Iowa sold out their last game. They were playing for a Big Ten championship against Michigan. Carver Hawkeye sold out. Indiana has had, you know, they built through winning the WNIT, and then they've managed to continue to build their fan base. And so to have a coach that not only can help recruit, but can really be the, you know, the poster of your program, I think is going to be important as well, because you got to build the fan base. And it's one of those chicken and egg things, because you bring recruits into a State Farm Center that is not very full at all. It's tough to sell that, but it's tough to get fans to come out if you're not winning as well. So, you know, at some point, yeah, you're going to have to break through. And I think there's potential here. Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned, the programs at Indiana and Michigan that had no success. Minnesota, back in the era that you're talking about, the late to mid to late 2000s, they were at the very bottom. They got a local product in Lindsey Whalen that said, I'm going to stay home. Brenda Fries was the coach at the time when they recruited. And a few years later, they were in the Final Four. So it can happen at Illinois. It you know, it's the Big Ten, as I said, is strong and getting stronger. And so we'll be up against that. But, you know, the potential is certainly there.
Mike Kuhn, visit Champaign County, also play-by-play for Illini Women's Basketball, a jack of all trades. Mike Kuhn, can't thank you enough, man, for the time.
Absolutely. Happy to do it anytime.
Great insight from Mike Kuhn, because I know not a lot of you are paying attention to Illinois women's basketball. They haven't given you very many reasons to have attention. Like, I would like to cover them a little bit more, but there's only so much people are interested in a program that's winning one or two Big Ten games a year. I remember Nancy Faye saying, hey, I hope to see you guys more this year. And it was like, okay, yeah, if there's some progress, you know, I set the standard of, hey, win five or six games. I think people might get interested with young players like Adelia McKenzie and Aaliyah Nye and Jada Peebles and now Kendall Bostic, a transfer who led the Big Ten in rebounding this past year, but just not able to put it together. And I know they had the COVID pauses and all of that, but you had to show more progress, and Illinois certainly didn't do that. So we'll see where Nancy Faye goes from here. She says she's retiring from coaching, but Josh Whitman, he told us last summer, this is an oddity of a job. They've gone so many different directions, and none of them have gained traction. I think a big part of Matt Beaumont was, you know, not having continuity. He got some talent here to Champaign, Shatrice White, a McDonald's All-American being one of them. But it's not like every couple of years you have players transferring out, and we find out why. With Mike DeVilbiss and that whole scandal with the assistant abuse and all of that. And then, you know, Nancy Faye comes in here and gives you a little bit of credibility like Lovie Smith, but like Lovie Smith, not enough winning. So we'll see if the next coach can get the talent, the culture piece right, and then just the improvement and the continuity this program certainly needs. So tough job for Josh Whitman, but his job is to find that next person, kind of like he found with Brad Underwood, and he hopes so with Brett Bielema. All right, thank you as always for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, a rating, review wherever you get your podcast. Also, check us out on YouTube if you don't already. We put all our interviews, most of our podcasts as well, and clip up some things as well if you want to see some more short bursts of some of our content up there at Illini Inquirer. So check that out on YouTube as well. And as always, if you want a month of VIP access, now's a good time for that at Illini Inquirer with Illinois football recruiting, and of course, Illinois basketball making its postseason run. Should be very interesting, and I think a lot of fun to follow this. So check us out at IlliniInquirer.com there. But until next time, everybody have a great day. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.